I would say every time I show up to the field, I, you know, look at the field and, you know, think, man, it could be cool to be playing in front of a huge crowd at PNC Park one day. You know, it kind of crosses my mind a lot. Mm. Hopefully that will be soon. And, you know, I just got to stick to the plan and take it day by day. And, you know, I put all my trust in God, and I know that, you know, my path is perfect in His eyes. And, you know, I'm just continue to work my tail off to get there. And hopefully that can be soon.
Papa Joe Show, Jason Mackey in for the guys. Austin Bechtold producing one final segment for our time together. That was Connor Griffin, Pirates prospect, joining me on the Fan Evening Show last week to talk a little bit about what's gone right for him, a promotion to High A Greensboro. He has continued to hit the cover off the ball, has looked very good, dominated Low A. It's been basically a year since the Pirates drafted Connor Griffin, and a lot has changed. I want to get into some of those thoughts. We're going to wrap up our Steelers segment. Some have additional thoughts with Brooke Pryor's joining us in her appearance. Thank you very much to Brooke for doing that. But I wanted to not miss the Connor Griffin topic here. This is something I wrote about at postgazette.com and something I feel strongly about with Connor. And, you know, it's, I guess, an inconvenient truth. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but the Pirates have obviously been criticized by me and others for their lack of draft success. Connor Griffin is an outlier. He's the rare position player prospect who is exciting. He's almost on that Paul Skeens sort of trajectory. He's a lot like Paul Skeens. He was an LSU commit. I talked to Connor last week about an event they had at LSU when he was still committed there, where it was a bunch of LSU commits, and Paul Skeens and other people on the college team talked to those recruits about their process. Connor Griffin and Skeens have become pretty good friends. They'll both go to Atlanta. Skeens, obviously, for the MLB All-Star Game, very likely could be starting for the National League. Connor Griffin will be there for the All-Star Futures Game, something he said was a goal. But we should probably have a bigger conversation relative to Connor Griffin. Now, he made one bump up in competition this year, again, going from low A to high A. I would hope and think that he's not done. I'd like to see the Pirates get this kid to double A at some point. It would make a lot of sense. If he keeps showing that he's able to handle high A, I don't understand why you would keep him there. I'm not saying rush him haphazardly. Obviously, if he's not producing, there's nothing at all wrong with that. He's only 19 years old, still very young, but he's a very talented kid. He's well put together physically, mentally, knows what he's doing. Baseball America has him now ranked as the number two prospect in all of baseball. MLB Pipeline, I believe, has him 13th. That's up pretty significantly from the start of the year. If you look at his tools and how they sort of assign rankings to them, again, on a 20 to 80 scale, power-wise, MLB Pipeline has him at a 60 grade, running 65, arm 70, fielding 60, and his hit tool a 50, which I still think is kind of low, an overall prospect grade of 60. This was a very good pick by the Pirates. It has panned out. Connor Griffin has been outstanding, but his trajectory is worth talking about because of stuff we've seen in Major League Baseball with other kids his age. Wasn't long ago, the Milwaukee Brewers threw a bunch of money, at least relatively speaking, at a kid named Jackson Chourio. You've probably heard that name mentioned, and they did that whenever he was in Double A. And it's basically betting on upside, betting on makeup, saying, this kid's going to be worth the money, and you get out earlier in front of that deal. It's maybe something you could argue the Pirates should have done with Paul Skeens before he ever pitched an inning in the major leagues to bet on him and use that as a way to buy out a year or two of free agency, to have him for longer. You have these arbitration numbers that Skeens in a couple years is going to go through arbitration for the first time. He's going to get a really nice raise. And he could conceivably price himself out of Pittsburgh. We'll see. I wouldn't be shocked if his arbitration award ends up being unprecedented, if not very, very high. A way to avoid that is to strike now. And you probably don't want to award a bunch of money to somebody in high A just because guys have strong starts to their major league career. And maybe they're just, you know, maybe Connor Griffin belongs in Double A. And that's okay. But I want to find out what he can handle. I want to use this opportunity to test him as much as possible. I think the futures game is a great opportunity for a little bit more competition. But if you look at other people from his draft, man, Connor Griffin is dusting the competition. And I see why. I remember when they took him. It was all college kid, college kid, college kid, college kid. Connor Griffin was the first high schooler off the board. All of a sudden, we're looking at his draft class, and he's one of the best prospects anywhere. He's at the top of his class, very, very mature for his age. He's not following the trajectory of a typical high school kid. So why treat him like one? Bring him up here. And I'm not saying, you know, bring him to Pittsburgh tomorrow. I'm saying, like, let's continue to accelerate this process because it might be in the Pirates' best interest. We spent an early portion of the show talking about what they need. They need offense. Well, here's a reasonable way to add it. You have some of it in your system. Challenge this kid, and if you can get out in front of this and maybe give him some money, extend him, make a deal that makes sense. They love efficient spending on homegrown products. Connor Griffin scratches all of those itches. Really, really impressive player. I don't know if I expect the Pirates to do that, but I'd certainly like to see them entertain it. What say you, Limits?
I would be completely fine with, one, moving him up to AA right now. I mean, think about this, Jason. Over the weekend, Griffin stole his 40th base on the season.
Oh, my gosh.
26 in A-ball, 14 in high A. Overall this season, he's hitting .333, 13 bombs, 53 RBIs. Strikeout numbers aren't even that bad. I mean, 75 isn't great compared to 27 walks. That would be maybe the one thing he strikes out like once per game that he can improve on for me. But he drives the ball well. He's got some pop, 16 doubles on the year. I would consider extending him next year. I would consider something we were talking about off air a little bit too, to a Jackson Churio type of contract, or I don't know if Bobby Witt's the right example. That guy's an MVP candidate year after year for the Royals. But basically a deal where you approach the player, whether they're in AAA or they just make their debut, and you get the deal done ASAP before you know that this player's a star at the major league level, because it seems like he's trending in that direction.
Yeah, and they waited with Skeens, which I sort of understand. I mean, if you look at a lot of those deals, get them done early, get them extended, even Polanco, that was a version of it. It wasn't to the extreme that I'd maybe like to see them do with Connor Griffin. You don't see it happen for pitchers often, but position players, it's a little bit more typical. You can expect and project what they're going to do, and Connor Griffin has shown a proclivity to produce. And I agree with you. I would challenge him, get him to AA. I want to get that sort of information. And if I get a pretty good sample size at AA, I'm going to feel good about that. Now, part of promoting him, or part of extending him and promoting him, you're probably going to have to put him on the major league club.
Right. Yeah.
I want to see a little bit more first. And I think that's why you're saying preach a little bit of patience with when you do it. But I'd still be thinking about it now. I would.
That's why I would do it next year. Because I think if he goes up to AA and he hits really well in AA, do you send him there for a month, and then by the time June rolls around, he's in AAA, then you're talking about Connor Griffin knocking on the door right around the All-Star break next year, potentially. And that one helps you with Super 2. That two helps you if you're the Pirates and, oh, well, we want him to succeed, but the double-edged sword of we don't want him to win the Rookie of the Year and lose a year of service time. Well, if you extend him, you don't have to worry about that. It could change their mindset if they get the deal done of when they would even call Connor Griffin up if he continues to rake.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll see. There's a lot happening with the Pirates, not necessarily on the field with the Major League team, but on the periphery. With a lot of trade deadline speculation, draft coming up, they'll take another player. What happens with Connor Griffin, et cetera. We put out a question earlier in the show, and I'm going to loop back to it now. What do you want Ben Cherington to do? Do you want him to make a big move? Do you want the Pirates to be cautious and maybe limit what Ben Cherington can do because the trade deadline has not been that great? Do you want him to sort of hold his cards, fold his cards? Maybe more of a conservative approach. Should they put a governor on him? And then if you move on from the GM in August or in the offseason, you allow that new guy to take charge and make moves or whatever. Got various responses. Limits is more in the camp of let him go, make the move. You put him in the position. If you're going to keep him in the position, allow him to do the job. I would rather see them act a little bit more conservatively. On Twitter, Dave Thomas says, don't make big moves, just trade the departing players. Another tweeter, AP, says, yep, trade Keller or Falter, Bednar or Santana, plus all players on expiring deals. Try to package players to bring back quality over quantity. Just a bunch of back and forth. I don't know if there's one consensus view on that. it is interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. Another one says Ben Cherington can only do harm, save all of our assets for the next GM. It doesn't have to be this way. That's another point I want to make. Like, it doesn't have to be the question that I'm presenting. It doesn't have to be either or. Well, it didn't have to be either or. It's probably too late in the process. Now, I just don't understand why we're here. I don't understand why we're having this discussion about the same guy doing the same stuff in an inefficient or ineffective way. But here we are. It's Pirates baseball. Doesn't always make sense. Might be entertaining, but it's not always easy to understand. Has your opinion changed limits, or are you still on the, go ahead, do your worst, buddy?
Well, I don't know if it's do your worst. Like, I don't have a lot of faith in the guy, but I also don't think that, you know, he's incompetent. You know, like,
he's only allowed to trade for pitching, though. How about that?
Yeah, if that was the case, then,
just trade for left-handed, soft-tossing pitching.
That would be significant. The thing about me with Cherington, and I, like everyone else, would have moved on. I think that everyone, they just should have cleared house before this upcoming season anyway, especially after seeing what they did in the offseason, which was basically nothing. I feel like he's going to try to save his job at this deadline and maybe make a move. I'm a little bit hesitant that he'll make a panic move. It'll be too strong of a move. But what if it's not? What if it's not that? What if it's Ben Cherington not overvaluing his assets as much anymore, and deciding, you know what, this is a good trade. This is a fair trade. Not him basically having prospect derangement syndrome, as Joe likes to call it, and hoarding all of his guys.
Yeah.
Or in this case, some of the major league talent, like Keller, like Bednar.
I almost want him to have prospect derangement syndrome. I'd rather that than like the Ben Cherington who just doesn't care. Like, you know what? I'm probably gone anyway. Let's see what happens. Screw it.
I'm not convinced that they're moving off of him. I'm just not. They should, but I'm not convinced of it. That's why I'd rather see a move be made than nothing at all. Then you go into the offseason to give him another opportunity to do nothing.
Oh, good. Oh, goody.
It's a terrible debate because, I mean, seriously, it is. Because
it's depressing.
We're talking about somebody who has not done anything with the hitting to be able to significantly improve this team. Spencer Horwitz is fine. Nick Gonzalez, I think, is a really good player. But we were banking on those two guys coming back and trying to save the Pirates. Like, that's what we were discussing for a while. And, look, they came back and their offense was better. But then again, here are your same problems in Seattle where the offense falls asleep and there's nothing to show for it. And a big reason why is because they need two significant bats in this lineup to pair with struggling O'Neill Cruz and inconsistent Brian Reynolds.
This is a mess. They forgot to pack the bats to go to Seattle.
Yeah, it's a disaster, Falsey.
It's a disaster.
I don't know where they can go with this.
I know. I love it. There's Jolie. Hey, I have one more question I wanted to ask you. I didn't get a chance to in the Steelers portion of the show.
Please.
So the Steelers have done some wacky stuff this offseason, right? They've really caught our attention, some unpredictable things. Brooke Pryor talked about, you know, really trying to break the mold, or it's almost like a mental block, not winning a playoff game. I think it's, I don't want to say desperation, but it certainly caused them to go outside their comfort zone. Where do you think this is stemming from? Do you think it's Art? Do you think it's Tomlin? Do you think it's Omar? All of the above? Like, why are the Steelers doing some wacky stuff this offseason?
I think it's the freedom that Omar Khan is allowed to have. I mean, could it be Mike Tomlin changing off of his philosophy? I don't know. Mike Tomlin seems to be pretty, the standard is the standard, by the book, this is how we do it.
I think the book has changed limits.
And I think people don't give Omar Khan enough credit, I think. Like, is the end-all be-all Mike Tomlin? Probably. But Omar Khan is definitely more of a poker player than Kevin Colbert was. He's definitely somebody that takes higher risks. Like, he's at the blackjack table going all in. Kevin, as much as, you know, how great he was here, Super Bowls and all, at the end, it was different. And the Steelers have never been that overly aggressive. Omar Khan is, maybe Andy Weidel too, they're taking a page out of the Eagles playbook, where they're aggressive in the draft. They make big moves. They take big swings. A.J. Brown, big moves on defense. Like, Howie Roseman made a lot of big moves like that. whether Saquon Barkley, you could say a similar thing with the way that Omar Khan and Andy Weidel are working, maybe so much in conjunction, but clearly as soon as Kevin Colbert was done and Omar stepped in, that's the main difference. And I don't think Tomlin should get a lot of credit for that. Omar Khan should be given some credit. And that's why I think he got the extension that he did.
Well, I agree with a version of that, but I think Mike Tomlin is intimately involved.
He is.
I think Mike Tomlin knows the narratives out there, and I don't think Mike Tomlin's ever going to admit it. But I think Mike Tomlin is very aware of like the same old, we're doing the same stuff, the conservative approach, the standard may not be the standard anymore. I think this offseason is showing us a whole new version of Mike Tomlin, man. I really do. And I don't know if it's good or bad.
Well, and he's bought into Aaron Rodgers, clearly.
Clearly. Like,
there's been a love affair between him and Aaron dating back years when they were nodding at each other on the sideline and Tom was calling timeouts in Green Bay.
I know.
So that's clearly a part of this, but I wonder if some of this is just Omar with the trades that he's made. Like, I think of the Claypool deal. I think of the Metcalf deal this year. They bring in Darius Slay. You could use it as, you could use the retirement home reference and I for like Slay and maybe even Ramsey and Rodgers, and I wouldn't fault you for that. I worry that this might be a little 2011 to go back to the Eagles dream team type of thing where they brought in all these guys like Babin and Nnamdi Asamoah and these guys who were good, but then it all fell apart and they went 8-8. And that's one way that this could ultimately go. But Omar Khan has done a lot of good with some things I still question. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, man. We were talking off the air. I can't remember a Steelers season that has had more intrigue for all kinds of levels.
No doubt.
I'm not saying intrigue because I think they're going to the Super Bowl. I think intrigue because there's a lot riding on it, and it's been so out of character for them. And I love it. And I think some of that is Omar Khan. I agree. You know, he's been a different type of poker player than Kevin Colbert. I think all executives to a degree are poker players, but he's certainly not been afraid to be aggressive, and I'm really curious to see how these moves pan out. This has been fun, man. Appreciate it. Always always enjoy working together, Limits.
Likewise, and we'll see you again later this week.
Yep, we'll do it Friday. You get Pomp Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.